Good morning, Northern Michigan, and welcome to Finding Fairways, our locally produced golf program we host each and every Saturday and Sunday here on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio and joined on the phone by Dan Pohl from the Polecat down in Mount Pleasant. Dan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing great. A lot of cool things. The weather's been fantastic down in our neck of the woods. Hopefully the golf fans around the area and the players have had a chance to get out and enjoy this great late summer weather here in Michigan. So, yeah, it's been fun playing a little bit, but I know we got a lot to talk about, so I'll let you lead me down that path, Jerry.
Well, when we started off this year, when you hosted for the first time, you were talking a little bit about you and your old roommate, J.R. Roth, winning the Pro Tournament in the beginning of the year, and it kickstarted really one of the great seasons in all of Michigan professional golf. J.R. just winning the Michigan PGA, he's really having a hell of a year.
You know, I had a chance to play with him the last couple of days before he went down there. We had the Soaring Eagle Open, which is a three-person scramble here at one round at the Waboose Run there at the old Holiday Greens, the executive course, and the finish at the Polecat. So Doug LaBelle and him and I and paired together, except for I think he's won everything else but this event. So I'm going to say it was Doug. I'm going to say it's Doug and I's fault. But, yeah, you know, I had the luxury of playing with Jeff in college. He followed me to the U of A. He's a couple of years younger than me, but never expected the type of golfer that he's become now. I think he will even admit that he's a much better player, much more confident player. He's given this state of Michigan a run in every event, except for the Michigan Open. He's pretty much taken down with the state pro-am. He won the Tournament of Champions and now the PGA. You're correct. Great summer of golf for Jeff.
Yeah, he's a great guy, too. I've known Jeff a long, long time when he was an assistant at Birmingham Country Club. I believe, if I read correctly, that this breaks his tie with Scotty Hebert, and he's won more Michigan professional events than any other golfer. So, you know, just capping off a great year, and as you know better than anybody, Dan, a great, great person as well.
Well, you know, you're correct, and that's him and his wife have been married to long, long time, Maureen, and just is the type of guy that you love being around. I did take the time to go up north to Boyne to have him check a few things with me. We put my swing on TrackMan and things like that because when I was playing with him, I didn't want to get beat by him, so I was trying to do everything I could do. But Jeff's the type of player that doesn't do anything special. He doesn't do anything. He doesn't hit it a long ways. He doesn't hit unbelievably great iron shots. He just gets the job done. And one of the better putters at age 62, I actually talked to him about 3 hours ago and congratulated him on his win. He said, Dan, I've never putted this good. And, you know, to play against the young guys and to play a very difficult golf course, golf club, to play the way he did. Proud of him. Great to call him a friend. You know, I just got to play more tournaments with him and see if something rubs off that I can get there, Jerry. But like I said, it's fun to play with him in the pro. We've become very better friends because you get separated out of college. I went on a tour. He kind of came back here and was doing his thing. And, you know, you get away from that. And to be able to play some competitive rounds with him and see how he reacts and how he plays. His course management skills are extremely good right now. Obviously, he's got a beat in Michigan.
Yeah, when we talked to him a couple weeks ago, he mentioned that his mental game right now is as strong as it's ever been. And, of course, technology is probably keeping him relevant as far as distance. But he said, yeah, my greatest strength is I know what my strengths and weaknesses are, and I do everything I possibly can not to do anything bad. And then when you roll it as good as JR does, you're going to do a lot of damage, and that's certainly been the case this year. And hats off to him. The one thing that you just mentioned, and I want our listeners to know, is he is at Boyne Highlands, and you can learn from Jeff Roth by just signing up for some lessons. And on top of being a great, great player, he is an excellent teacher.
Yeah, you know, there's guys that kind of just are casual teachers. He's not, he kind of teach simplistically. Jeff was always what I would consider soft. You know, he wasn't an athlete, you know, muscular, that type of thing, not fast twitch muscles and things like that. But what he's done is he's created some speed training up there for himself. He's in better shape than he was because, you know, at 62, it's hard to get, you know, up for a few, for a lot of events. But I'll tell you what he did. Okay, he went down and played a practice round at Flint on Friday morning, driving down, and then came up to Mount Pleasant, stayed Friday night, played with us, Saturday and Sunday, drove him around the golf course, showed him a little bit of what on, and then he takes off and drives down Sunday night to Flint and to play Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. You know, you 6 days in a row of action, five in a row of playing, you know, competitive golf at 62, you got to be prepared for that. And I think right now JR is as prepared for each event as anybody can be. And like I said, unfortunately, Doug and I couldn't bring him into the winner's circle on my own track. So I'll take the knife for that one.
That's almost hard to imagine, Dan, that you and LaBelle, who's a very good player in his own right, and JR couldn't scrape together a win.
Well, we finished third, which doesn't get us a whole lot of Ryder Cup points. But the thing was, 64, 62, and 44, you know, that I think that adds up to 170 years of age. We were definitely in an area that I think some of them averaged probably 85 or 90 years at the most. So we gave up a little bit off the tee, which was too much for us, and hit too many really mediocre short iron shots to really be up there. But, you know, we were one shot out of the lead after the first day, and then we didn't play very good the second day and ended up third. But it was fun. Like I said, I think I prepared him. All my negative talking prepared him for he was probably wanting to get out of Mount Pleasant so he could get down there and get mentally prepared, and he certainly was.
Well, he did have a little advantage. Of course, he worked at Flint Golf Club for a number of years.
And I know he is so excited now. I didn't realize that. That win gets him into the Quicken Loans event at Detroit Golf Club next year if it's there again. And I told him, I said, JR, I said, I'll caddy for you down there, but you got to play with a 3-5-7-9 iron, one wood, and one ball and one tee, and maybe I can make it around. And he started laughing. But, you know, that'll be an interesting thing for him at 63 years old to be playing in, you know, a regular tour event. It'll be something else if he could make the cut and play pretty good.
You know, I know they stretched that DGC course out to about 7,300 yards. It still didn't appear to play super long. And in a lot of ways, that's a course that really would fit JR's playing style.
You know, I don't think there's a style of golf course that right now he can't play. If you look at where he's won this year, whether it's, you know, up at Boyne in the Pro-Am portion of it, down at Pine Lake and, you know, Orchard Lake down in Detroit, Flint Golf Club, Tournament of Champions, I do believe is that over at Crystal Mountain or something?
No, that was at Boyne.
Well, like I said, you know, he's played good at all golf courses. He's got the type of game that is suitable if he gets his iron game in play. So, like I said, I wouldn't doubt it if he goes down and makes the cut next year. And like I said, he's had a special year, and hats off to him.
Yeah, we want to give our big Finding Fairways kudos to Jeff Roth for an outstanding year. When we come back here on Finding Fairways, Dan and I will dissect the field for the first day out of the Tour Championship at Eastlake and what has proved to be some amazing changes from the PGA Tour worth talking about here on Finding Fairways on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. All right, it's time to check in with our friends at carlsgolfland.com. General Manager Pete Line on the phone with us. Pete, it's hard to believe that the bulk of the golf season is already past us as we've got the Tour Championship going on, but that means free shipping for everyone at Carl's Golfland.
Yeah, free shipping through Sunday for the Tour Championship, and it looks like it's going to be a great tournament, so I can't wait to see how that turns out.
And I know you and I were talking off air, and one of the things that carlsgolfland.com has been focusing on all year is the greatest selection of golf footwear, and now you're going to put it all on deep, deep discount.
Yep. Starting this weekend, we will have shoes on sale and top sales. Everything will be on sale, men's and ladies, juniors. We got all kinds of stuff on sale.
You know, and at the prices that carlsgolfland.com puts out there, the best thing to do is buy a couple of pair and stock up and just be ready for your winter vacation golf, your fall golf, and ready for next golf season.
That's right. Who couldn't use a new pair of shoes?
You know, they really make your outfit. I got to tell you, the way they, with all the different styles and versatility of these shoes, like you and I were talking about before, you can wear them out off the golf course.
Yeah, a lot of the Spikeless models, I know a lot of people use them as casual wear in the evening and, you know, out and about town.
Well, you've got that, and plus I'm sure you're going to have a lot of end-of-the-season runoffs and deep, deep discounts in every department. So it's the time is now to head to golf. The time is now to head to carlsgolfland.com.
We got lots of bargains out there on the website. So, everybody hit that, you know, head to carlsgolfland.com, find a good deal.
All right, Pete Line, have a great weekend, and let's watch some of that golf tournament together. Okay, we're back here on Finding Fairways on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio and joined by Dan Pohl down at the Polecat in Mount Pleasant. Dan, the PGA took a pretty serious look at how they wanted to change the way the PGA Tour did their playoffs and then added a zinger in at the bottom here. What do you think about this handicapping the field for the final event?
Well, I was a little confused, to tell you the truth. I guess they're just searching for something that can get people interested or talking golf when football's starting or something. You know, once you get the fever for the football, I'm not sure that the golf becomes as exciting for people. But a little confusing, not for the fact that you know, somebody's got a lead. I mean, there was going to be a lead in points or something. It's just that I didn't understand when they got the points, you know, where Reed by winning one, even it all boils down to these seasonal ending type deals in the playoffs going to three tournaments. How could they make it work? And I don't know if it's going to be successful. I think it's got people talking, but you know, when you look at the field and you're always going to go when you got the top 30 and you don't have Tiger in it, you don't have Molinari, you don't have Spieth. You know, people are going to wonder. And then you look at the other ones and you see Answer and Connors and Lucas Glover and Jason Kokrak, and you kind of go, okay, what happened here? And not that those guys didn't have great years those last four, but that's not what you usually look at as the Tour Championship, you know. So I think they made a decision to see if something was create some interest, and I guess it's up to the everyday golfer to figure out whether it's you know, the right thing or not.
Yeah, you know, I give the Tour kudos for trying something different. I never had a problem with having one guy win the Coca-Cola a part of the Tour Championship and somebody winning the FedEx Cup. I mean, it happened a number of times, and it was pretty exciting. I mean, last year, if Rose hadn't finished in third place, Tiger would have won the whole thing. Same thing happened a few years ago when Tiger won the FedEx Cup and Phil won the Tour Championship against each other. So I thought that created some pretty interesting golf. I agree with you.
And I think this one, the only thing that this does is I think it brings a lot more of the field, you know, together. I mean, most of the time, only five guys could really win the
right,
you know, the total thing. So I think they were trying to find a way to, okay, just like, you know, Shoffley did today. I mean, he goes out and shoots six under, and he's, you know, right there tied at the top. So, you know, I think it did what it wanted to do, is that it, right now you've got 10, 12 guys, and if somebody goes out and, you know, shoots a good score tomorrow, that's, you know, four or five under a Paul Casey or whoever that may be, you know, they're right into it also. It is what it is. I mean, it's basically a bunch of really good players making more money. It doesn't really make a difference on how they do it. I think there's, you know, so big of situational stuff and money involved during the year that I'd love to see this particular event be a charity or something. You know, these guys have made a lot of money. You know, it's, I mean, I played in the Tour Championship, the old one back at Pebble Beach once, and we made like 28 or 30,000 for last place. They're going to make 300 and some thousand for last place. So, again, whatever the format may be, whatever the goal of winning this $10 million annuity and all that, bottom line is, every one of these guys have had great years. If you don't give Lucas Glover the Comeback Player of the Year award, something's wrong with what he had went through, and now to get up and get into the top 30, that's an amazing deal. As far as this format, I'm not sure that it's a good or bad situation, depending on whether you're looking to try to get more guys into the mix.
Well, yeah, I agree with you. A lot of people were kind of scratching their heads. I don't know if anybody screamed about it, but Nota Begay mentioned after they were wrapping up last week, Tiger Woods won the Masters and he's not in the Tour Championship. I know he didn't play very well after he won the Masters, but still, a lot of people were scratching their heads on why the majors weren't weighted a little bit differently. And as you pointed out, some of these guys who we really, I've never heard of this Connors guy before this year. And
yeah, and he's from England, I think, or somewhere. You know, from
he
the
is
European
from Canada.
Yeah. Oh, is that a Canadian?
Yeah. Okay. And I agree with you. There's a few people in here that put on the afterburners here at the end of the year. And even if you didn't win one of the playoff events, you got enough points to vault your way in there and kick Tiger Woods, kick Phil Mickelson, kicked a whole bunch of guys out who had pretty substantial years, at least in the front end of the year.
Yeah, and you know, again, that's what these playoffs have done from the get-go, is if you got hot at the right time, you had a shot. But normally those guys just moved into like the 30th position or the 29 or whatever it was and had, you know, a chance to make big, you know, big years. I don't know. I look at this field now and I say, okay, you know, you've got the big guy, the big guns up there, and McIlroy,
yeah,
and Koepka and Thomas and those guys. But then you look down into the middle of the field with, you know, the, I wouldn't call them also-rans, but then there's Cantley, Matsuyama, Rahm, Casey, Woodlands, Kuchar. You know, all household names have great years, but can they make it a really good year by winning this Tour Championship? And where does that put them on, you know, in people's mind? Does this tournament change the way people perceive that top tier player?
Yeah, the player of the year, I get you. When you look at this, obviously we have three more days of competition to go. Koepka's right at the top again, which you knew he would be because he was, what, they gave him 6 under to start the tournament or 7 under. And I think Koepka is player of the year unless McIlroy happens to win this. Then you've got an argument for McIlroy being FedEx champion and winning at TPC. But, you know, Koepka.
Well, I think it depends on how McIlroy, if he would win, how he wins. You know, that'll be in where Koepka is in the mix. I don't think if he goes along and just wins it, but he's, you know, by one and it doesn't blow somebody away, I don't think you can really put him in that position if Koepka finishes second, third, somewhere in that area.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what gets me, you know, about those is who was talking at the beginning of the year, or who wasn't talking about Dustin Johnson, the number one player.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he's like, you know, nobody even knows how he's playing. I mean, when Fowler left the West Coast, you know, he was the guy, and all of a sudden, he's just he's had a great year. But it's amazing how some of these players get kind of tossed back in the back when Dustin Johnson, I don't know how long he was the position of number one, but it was a long time. I don't think, even with McIlroy's win, I don't think I could give him the player of the year because of what he didn't do in some of the other events.
Yeah, he didn't play very well in the majors, that's for sure. And going back to Dustin Johnson, we actually talked about this last week with Joe Charles, and Dustin Johnson just cannot make anything right now. Dan, he would have easily won the Open Championship if he'd made any putts. I mean, he hit it so close and missed so many 10-footers, and I think it stuck with him. I haven't seen him make a putt outside of 5 foot in 2 months.
Well, and that runs in cycles like that. I mean, you know, when Spieth was winning, we saw the ball going in the hole from everywhere, and,
yep.
and now he gets going and then misses a couple, and it's tough to get out of there. I mean, the player that I've always thought was, you know, truly the best ball striker, and in Justin Rose, my question with Justin Rose is, that, you know, would he be comfortable saying maybe the equipment change and everything else was a little bit of a factor? Or did he practice enough with it? And, you know, was it just a year where he was overshadowed by the great play of some of these other players? So many things. I mean, if you just talked about a year of question marks and a year of who did this, where did this guy go, and then how did he pop? I mean, we didn't even talk about Justin Thomas because of his wrist injury and the things that were going on until, what, maybe 3 weeks ago? And all of a sudden he goes into the, you know, leading. And it was like, you know, in the middle of the year, I'm not sure that a lot of people would have picked Justin Thomas as leading going into the Tour Championship. So a lot of things have happened.
Yeah, a lot of things have happened in a condensed time. And when we return here on Finding Fairways, I want to talk to Dan about how drastic the PGA Tour schedule changed this year. And since you mentioned Justin Thomas, just the unbelievable, brilliant play he had last week at Medina. So we'll talk about that when we return here on WGRY and WBNZ's Finding Fairways, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. We're back on Finding Fairways on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. Jerry Coyne in studio, and calling in from the Polecat is Dan Pohl. Dan, on top of experimenting with the Tour Championship like we outlined here in the last segment, they really condensed this entire Tour schedule. At least from the outset, it seemed to really hurt Tiger Woods and a few of the other players, guys that just couldn't understand how to put their schedule together. So now that you look at it at the end of the year, I guess we have to let the dust settle and look at the ratings. What was your thought about how this all played out?
Well, a couple of things. You know, you look at the guys who have played busy schedules over the course of their career, and I can throw one guy right up there at the top of the list, Kuchar. I mean, with Matt Kuchar, I mean, it seems like every tournament you look at, he's up there and he's playing good. I don't know when he rests. I mean, so he's used to that style of trying to intermingle and intersperse his schedule. You know, when you've got a guy like Tiger Woods that's not only trying to figure out physically, you know, when he's going to be on the top of his game and mentally when he's prepared to go, who has really positioned his career in playing places that fit his game and playing places that he's obviously been successful on, and then trying to incorporate this new mix-and-match schedule, it's got to be difficult. Now, again, they should be able to make that adjustment. I mean, that's not crazy. I think the hardest ones that really felt schedule change was probably the European players and the guys that were trying to dual things. You know, I mean, you look at you know, Rory played quite a bit, but you look at Rahm going over, you look at, you know, a lot of with Fleetwood and Paul Casey and, you know, really trying to figure out how to blend those two, you know, tours together. And then, you know, that's probably why the Answers of the world and guys like that played over here full time. And really just kind of, you don't see any Japanese players on this mix, do you, except Matsuyama?
Yeah.
And he's pretty much on here. A lot of times before, you saw those guys be able to integrate into the tour schedules. And I think it was very difficult to try to figure out where, what stretches you wanted to play in, and now with the shoulder seasons or the wraparound or whatever you want to call them, now guys got to figure out what they're going to be doing in November and December, where that used to be the 2 months where you'd even think about golf. I mean, when we finished the Walt Disney Classic, was our last tournament in the, you know, towards the about the third week in October, you didn't think about anything unless you were going to Japan to maybe play in a couple of tournaments over there. If you didn't go there, you had 2 months and you started out at the Bob Hope Classic in January with a little bit of freshness. Now, it's going to be very interesting, and this could be a good thing for the Tiger Woodses of the world, who can take a longer break now and decide maybe what he's going to play or if he's going to play in the fall.
You brought up a couple of things that I really hadn't thought about, and then one that I was reminded of. Number one, the European players, it's going to be a Chinese fire drill for those guys next year because it's a Ryder Cup year. So they've got to figure out how to get their points and how much more they're going to have to play on the European Tour. I mean, Rory's always going to have enough points, and so will Rose. But you know what I mean. I hadn't even thought about that. Next year is going to be crazy for those guys. And
well,
then,
I think the Ryder Cup right now, from the European side, they should just take the whole team that they had last year and just not have any qualifying. Because that was a pretty good matchups that they had. There might be an infusion of one or two guys in there, but there are things that guys want to get involved with and be on those teams, and trying to figure out how much golf is going to make the difference there is going to be critical. And you know, you almost would see somebody making a choice on, okay, do we lessen the amount of set spots and maybe give more picks? You know, so that you don't get somebody only playing good at a certain time prior to it. And just like the Tour Championship, it's usually heavier point system and more merit to it on that second year of a Ryder Cup picking. You know, a lot of things to think about. I mean, I've always told people that the greatest asset of a tour player is his ability to adapt to situational stuff, because it all boils down to being prepared, not only physically but mentally, and being sharp and wanting to be out there. And so I think these guys will figure it out. I think they'll determine, you know, which events fit their game. I know there for a while, you know, they wanted every tour player to, you know, like every third year playing an event that he hadn't played in.
Right.
But they're forcing these guys now to maybe not be able to say, okay, I'm going to go somewhere that I hadn't played before. And they're going to look at, okay, the old Bob Hope Classic, the one out, and say, well, I'm not going to be able to go there because it just, scheduling-wise, it doesn't make any sense. So it could hurt some play road events, but, you know, who knows?
Yeah, it did open up a big can of worms, and of course, they're going to dissect a lot of it based on television ratings, because, as you mentioned before, the reason why they did this is to get out of football season. Maybe that it'll prove to be not as important as they think. The one thing that was cool, though, Dan, was last week's event at Medina, the BMW Championship, because the way they had the points set up, which was confusing to say the least, but the guys were all playing, jockeying for position to get higher up on the leaderboard, so they didn't finish at even, you know, they weren't going to go into the Tour Championship at even par. They wanted to get the four under, the five unders. So everybody played their asses off the whole week. And, you know, Justin Thomas had one of the greatest tournaments that you can ever look at in PGA Tour history, with breaking the course record twice in the same week.
Well, anybody who's had the opportunity to play at Medina knows that it's no slouch golf course. I mean,
right.
I don't care if it's wet and the pins are, you know, in the middle of the green and you're hitting wedges, you still got to perform. And with that type of going on and knowing where he had to be, perform like that, you know that he brought his game to another level. You know, I mean, there's some great players and great club professionals that have come out of that area, and they know, you know, Bobolink and Chicago Golf Club and
right.
all these things, and Medina is right there with them all. And to see these players perform at such a high level is fantastic. We all know that these are great players. We all know they have the capability of shooting low at any time. And when they get on a roll like that and they're on a golf course that they're very comfortable with, I happen to be playing in the World Series of Golf when Ola Thabel shot the 60 or 61 there in tough conditions. I always thought that might be one of the great rounds played at Firestone, and to go out and do it twice, that's something special.
Yeah, Firestone and Medina are actually quite a bit alike. You should know better than anybody. Getting lost in what JT did, Matsuyama broke the course record the first day and then vaults himself into contention because he was outside of the top 30. Then plays very poorly on Saturday when JT shoots 61. Matsuyama comes back and shoots another 64. So that guy's red hot, and you got to give him credit for bailing out and keeping in the top 30 for the Tour Championship.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the bottom line for those guys like that, there was really not a lot to lose. I mean, if Matsuyama doesn't make it into the top 30, is he going to have call it a bad year when he still won $3, 4, or 5 million? I mean, that's the thing about these tour championships now. It's like I said, you know, we love watching it, but it's kind of like these guys have had unbelievable great years, and now they're going to get an extra $10 or $12 million for playing a game that they've already kind of set their lives up for. And I just, a mentality that, you know, people would love to see certain players, do well, obviously, but on the financial side, they're just giving so much money away during this that it's almost scary. Said I played in a few of them, and if the guys won it, well, like I said, I think if you finished 28th in the tour championship back then, you made $28,000 or $30,000. And to be able to say that I could finish 30th here in this event this week and still bring home 300 and some thousand on one side, and then also get portions of the annuity on that's a lot. I mean, I don't know if you're making that kind of money up there at the radio station, but I'm not folding shirts at the Polecat. I'm not making that much.
Well, that I don't have TV cameras on me doing my radio show and 14 million people watching, Dan, or there might be a few more dollars in it.
Those guys don't know that. Hell, they when you're playing good, that's the least of your concerns. Unless you do something goofy and then it'll show out. But when you're playing like that, you're in a different arena and a different area code when you're talking about that. I don't even call it a zone, because a zone can be restrictive. They're in this atmosphere that is pretty dang impressive on what they're doing. But you look at all these guys, and if somebody shot even par today, which was actually not too bad a score there, a lot of them got lapped. So, Shoffley's 64, and then, a bunch of 66s and stuff. I'll be very interested, and I'm sure we're going to talk the last segment maybe about who we think might win, but I've got my ideas and my eyes on somebody that I think will at least be there.
All right, when we return here on Finding Fairways, we'll find out Dan's pick for the rest of the Tour Championship, and a reason why to watch the shoulder season or the off season this year that you might not have thought about. When we come back here on Finding Fairways on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Back here on Finding Fairways on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by CarlsGolfLand.com. Jerry Coyne in studio and Dan Pohl calling from the beautiful Polecat down in Mount Pleasant. Dan, we'll talk first about the rest of the three rounds that are going to happen on East Lake, which really is a tremendous venue for this tournament and some of the toughest greens in the world. So you said you're looking at the leaderboard. Who do you like going forward?
There's a guy that's obviously had a great year in Matt Kuchar that's from that area that knows these greens probably about as well as anybody. He shot 4 under today, and he made it look fairly easy. He can use his draw on 18 to put that down there. He knocked it down in 2 when a lot of guys were driving it through the fairway. But I think the reason I would maybe, again, pick him is the consistency he's having from rounds to rounds. There's just the driver's good. He putts those greens good. You've played there. You know how difficult they can be to putt. But I look at the list of guys. I mean, if you're going to take somebody, right now you're going to look at Shoffley because he's never shot over par there.
Right.
So, nine times he's played the golf course competitively, and 9 times he's broke par. So that'll be pretty tough to beat. But you got to remember that he came out of the -4 position today, kind of wasn't in the mix, wasn't in those last groups, even though, 4 or 5 groups ahead, was able to kind of run out of the daylight and get into the mix. But, I watched Rahm play a little bit. He's, the driver is going to be the key thing. And I'm not sure that there's, obviously Koepka hits it a mile, if he can keep the ball in play, but you saw on 17, he drove it through the fairway, had to manipulate the ball with short irons out of the rough is not even easy there. So, I picked Matt because of just his driving ability. I mean, it doesn't seem like he drives himself out of play. He's solid enough iron player where he can get some opportunities. And then, you know, they showed on 18, he actually hit it down there 360 and hit an iron on the green. So, again, there's so many good players. Obviously, you know, Thomas, you know, birdied the last hole to get back into the tie from the lead. But I think somebody that's not going to be up and down and is going to be able to smile through this and doesn't have as much pressure on him, coming from back at -4, shooting 4 under today, he's right in the mix. Just be whether or not that driver stays in the fairway for him.
Well, I didn't think about that, but it's an outstanding pick. Yeah, Matt Kuchar went to Georgia Tech, and I'm sure you're right. He's played that golf course a ton. They probably had the pins in fairly accessible places today. They usually do on Thursday. All those greens are crowned like they are at Pinehurst, so a lot of guys and gals who are listening have probably played Pinehurst number 2. The greens are very, very similar to that, which if you don't hit the middle of the greens, you can't go flag hunting at Eastlake. You're just going to end up short-siding yourself a runoff in collection areas.
Well, let me ask you a question, having played there, because the last 3 holes are dogleg lefts. Am I correct in that?
Well, they flipped the 9s a couple years ago.
The ones that they're playing as 18 now,
yeah,
is par 5.
They are.
17's a little dogleg left. 16's a little dogleg left. Fits right into a finisher that isn't like McIlroy on 18. He's got to play, you know, if he does hit it left, it catches up into the grass over there.
Right.
He's not a true drawer of the ball off the tee. And so I look at a guy that can just, you know, manufacture that driver with a little bit of draw and get it up there and take advantage of it is really what I look at it at. A golf course like that fits a guy that just kind of moves it a little bit. Doesn't have to cut it much or doesn't have to draw it much, but his length is actually not curtailed by the dog leg.
Yeah, I didn't think about that until I was watching it last year, because I believe last year was the first year that they had played the golf course the other way around. And, you know, they didn't want to end with a par 3 there at 18. I remember playing there once, and it damn near hit the clubhouse playing that long par 3. The holes leading up to the new 18 make for a lot more drama, and I agree with you that some of those guys who are cutting that corner, putting themselves into some serious trouble. I don't know what's going to happen. The best thing about it, I guess, Dan, is that you have a pretty serious risk-reward par 5 coming down to the end there. And, of course, that last par 3 over water is pretty dangerous. It's a really good finish now.
And I may disagree with you on how they set up the golf course, because the tour doesn't set it up easier on Thursday to try to separate the field or anything else. There's usually a mentality of 6 of the, you know, six. Like you saw 18 on the front left. You saw a couple that front right corner on I think it was 16 or 17. And so they had them in some kind of the normal Thursday rotation. The question is, usually, how does it fit that last round's eye to some of those draw players or, you know, a certain aspect? And if they don't get any rain and it dries it out, they're going to get a lot of run out, which, again,
right,
negates a long hitter's ability to turn it with the dog leg. And so there is a distance where you actually, you know, it can be troublesome. So, again, the conditions can change on a daily basis. A guy like McIlroy, a guy like Koepka, would probably rather see it just a tad soft so that ball's not releasing and going through fairway.
You had the advantage over me. I didn't get to see any of the play today. We mentioned DJ not putting well. Well, it's been plaguing Rory for most of the year. I mean, if Rory made some more putts, he'd have won more tournaments. And lately, it seems Koepka hasn't been making a lot of putts. The greens are the number one defense of this golf course, so somebody's going to have to get a hot putter, I believe. You know, Schauffele obviously puts these greens well, and he's known as a pretty good putter. So if Koepka or Rory's going to win, that putter's going to have to get hot.
Well, I can't disagree with that, but I'm going to add into it that it's an iron player's golf course. You got to stick the ball underneath the hole. I mean, Koepka made a great 10-footer on the last hole that would have probably went 8 or 10 feet by if he misses. You got to put the ball underneath the hole. Good as these players are, they can't be putting from behind the hole too often, or they're not going to make as many putts. Can't be as aggressive. So you got to look at the guys that are really on top of their distance control on their irons.
Yeah,
and you're going to do that out of the fairways. And Kuchar does very well. Is he doesn't spin the ball a ton. And so, you know, his ball is coming in there. It's hitting soft, but it's not checking and, you know, moving back and moving off a slope. So, you know, you look at a guy like that that can control his spin because he picks the ball more off of the ground than these guys that are jamming it down in there. So, you know, a guy like McIlroy can put a ton of spin on it when he wants to, but that might be negated on some of these back hole locations where you got to fly it back on a tier. You'd rather hit it just a little short and just let it release to the hole. So, again, a great golf course all around. You got to drive it well. You got to putt it well. But my feeling is you got to put your irons in some places where you can play them. And if you put it behind the hole too often or have it even pin high and have those big breakers, you're not going to putt very well.
Spoken like a great ball striker, Dan.
you look at Scheffler. When he's on, he's in control. I mean, I watched a couple of shots today that they said you got to keep it below the hill here, the little short hole where they're hitting it and it was bouncing back over the green. It was so fast that, you know, if they missed it, had to make five footers coming back. Now, is that part of the putting? You betcha. It's also part of you. I would rather have a 15 footer going up the hill than an 8 footer going down. You're going to make more of those, you know, those 15 footers than you are the 8.
Absolutely. Very briefly, I want to talk, as we mentioned, the shoulder season is going to be interesting this year because Phil Mickelson right now is outside of the rating points as an automatic qualifier for the President's Cup. And he mentioned in his interview after the BMW Championship that he's going to play some of these events to see if he can get his game in shape and have Tiger pick him because he's the only player that has played in every single one of the President's Cups. So that'll be kind of cool to watch, see him play some of those courses. He can get his game into shape to Tiger to pick him.
Well, it'll be a yes or no. Phil's an interesting story. Listen, folks, somewhere down the line, streaks come to an end. You know, he would really have to play well and put himself in the position. Because I think if you get this thing going, you're going to see most of these players that are on that edge of President's Cup teams and everything playing this shoulder season also. So it's not just Phil that's on it. I haven't seen a list of those also Rans, but you got to believe that there's a couple of names in there, like Gary Woodland and guys like that. That you are
Finau,
they? You know, is
Finau
Andrew Schauffele, is he an automatic guy? You know, it's going to be some tough picks.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Finau is just outside. Justin Thomas is just outside. So there's a number of guys. They only had 8 automatic qualifiers and 4 captain's picks. So, yeah, I agree with you, Dan. It's going to lend – the avid golf fan is going to be watching more of this shoulder season than they ever have before.
Well, and that's great. That's great for golf.
Yeah, it's still – as we come to a close of finding fairways, there's still a lot of golf to be played. So, Dan, I want to thank you for joining us all throughout this golf season. Although, as I said, it's nowhere near done. I mean, you've got another 2 months of golf down at the Polecat. So how do people get a tee time down there?
We have been just busy, busy. And so just give a call at 989-773-4221 and see if we can fit you in. And we'll go to our fall rates here, which will be around $50 in the second week in September. But I want to make sure that your listeners and the people that have followed me know the class individual that you are and the professionalism that you put into every one of your shows, because I've done this for a long time, my own show, and been on other things, and I think it's not as easy as people would think just talking golf. and we have a great time doing it, and you let me just kind of run with things, and I appreciate that, because golf's tough. It's not tough to talk about, but it's tough to get your thought all congested into a short period of time. That's what makes on-course commentaries good, you know, how they do it. But I appreciate the time I've been able to spend with you. And, you know, if you're so inclined and want to do it again next year, if we're both, you know, still have our mouths available to talk, we'll tour again, Jerry.
Dan, thanks so much. And like I said, we're going to get you and JR in studio next year and do a whole show. It'll be a blast.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. We'll have to sing Bear Down Arizona. You know, I was a Wildcat. You know, there's not many times when you see a couple of Arizona Wildcats strutting around the state of Michigan. But, dang, we're doing it. And like I said, we had a great segment talking about JR, and I couldn't be happier for him.
It's going to be a pleasure. Dan, have a great off season, and we'll be back with you next year on Finding Fairways.
You got it. Take care, my friend.
All right. As we like to say here, Find a fairway of your own, stick a peg in the ground, and pound it down the middle. We'll talk to you next week here on WGRY and WBNZ, brought to us by carlsgolfland.com. All right, it's time to check in with our friends at Boyne Golf. Ken Griffin, Director of Marketing, is on the line with me. And Ken, Boyne just seems to get more and more notoriety this year. Not only did J.R. Roth win another tournament, the Michigan PGA, but you got Matt Adam from the Golf Channel and Fairways of Life bringing in a fan trip group. So you guys have really got it going on.
We've got guys certainly that are on a roll. You know, as far as J.R. Roth, you know, he's been with us a few years now. He's a Michigan legend, more tournament wins in Michigan than anybody, and I think this was his sixth PGA professional major, which also gives him a qualifier into the national event as well as entry into the Rocket Mortgage Classic next spring. So that would be special. And you know, Matt Adams is on quite a roll as a golf host, you know, both on the Golf Channel and Fairways of Life, and he's chosen to bring a fan trip here. So they're going to be staying at Bay Harbor and playing the Heather and the Lynx Quarry and the Ross and the Hills. So they're going to have some great golf.
Just to be a part of this experience that Matt's putting these guys through, all you got to do is go to Boyne Golf, take advantage of some of the great rates, daily doubles and stuff. Tell our listeners about those, Ken.
Well, you've got happy hour specials after four, still plenty of light, so you can play our courses from $56. Resort golf doesn't have to be overly expensive. You've got daily doubles where you get two rounds for each golfer from just $110, or two for Tuesday. So get a friend and come out, and two of you can play for like $106.
Yeah, $52, $53 to play any of the 10 great courses, trust me, is a bargain. When you go out to Boyne and you play it, and then you go back and play wherever else you play here in northern Michigan, you're going to know that you got a heck of a deal.
Well, and speaking of deals, we've also got Tour Championship specials. You know, we always follow the majors, and we just continued it. The Tour Championship specials are available now through Tuesday. You can go in and book your tee time, but you take $30 off of your tee times, and that's available through the rest of the season. Or you can do stay-and-play specials, which gives you an overnight lodging in 18, weekdays from 95, or weekends from 119. Or you may get unlimited golf for like another $20 on weekdays.
And let's not forget about all the great accommodations and the food service and the bars and the great staffing to make the trip complete.
Well, I always say our staff really loves living the northern Michigan lifestyle. We all like to share that, and we love to give them short snippets of that for their vacation, too.
And that's exactly how it is delivered at Boyne. So we got to encourage everybody to go to BoyneGolf.com and book those tee times, snatch up those deals right away. Ken, we'll be back with you next week, and I'll see you on the fairways.
Thanks, Jerry. You have a great weekend.
You too, bud.